The endless parade of time. Who can say what fruits the future will see ripen? We can only keep looking towards
tomorrow's world with Isla Christensen and Stella Huggins on 95BFM.
Stella and Isla have been inspired by their daily lockdown walks to learn about urban planning and how Auckland may change in the future. Looking at concepts of walkability and neighbourhoods, Dr. Lee Betty talks them through the history, future aspirations and barriers of urban design.
Hello, Earthlings.
Welcome back to our bias segment, Tomorrow's World.
I'm Isla Christensen.
And I'm Stella Huggins.
This is the segment where we talk science and society and how those two things interact.
Last week, we looked back in time, sharing stories of famous science inventions that were the products of mistakes.
And this week, inspired by week 10 in lockdown and our daily walks, you know, the government-advised leg spreading, we wanted to look at how the design of cities influences our mental and physical well-being.
We look at the ideas of walkability, which is how connected and accessible city utilities are by walking or cycling.
As well as the idea of livability, where cities are more than the buildings we live in, but are the local parks, the people you know, and if you're lucky enough, you might be close to a beach.
With 27 years of experience, this week we are lucky to be joined by Dr. Lee Betty, who is the director of the Auckland University's Urban Design Program, as well as an independent hearing commissioner for Auckland Council, Queenstown Lakes and Kaipara District Council.
We started our interview by asking Dr. Lee Betty to give an overview of the history of urban planning and why walkability is a rising priority.
Well, I think, you know, we could spend days and days talking about this, couldn't we? But let's just, if you go back, fundamentally, you know, we have cities and towns because they're mediums of exchange, and that's why we have them, right? You've moved up from the Hawke's Bay, you've come to Auckland because big cities have universities and things like that. But conceptually, you know, especially in the modern sense, sort of in the, since the 1970s, there's been a big pushback against urban sprawl, you know, and that started, it started because of environmental movements, it started all those sort of silent springs, chaos and all that sort of stuff, you know, brought it all to the fore. And the idea behind this, in many ways, it's a reflection and a critique of modernism. And we went through these ideas of, you know, as we went through industrialization, people moved from the rural to the urban. We created all these environmental health problems that came out of that. As we realized that was not sustainable, you know, and you could see that in the 70s, as I just talked about, sustainability cuts kicking in. We start realizing limits to growth. And so we started to return back to these concepts of neighborhoods. And we've been talking about this concept for a long period, in the, even in the New Zealand context. If you go back to the first sort of regional plan for Auckland, 1974, was talking about urban growth and trying to concentrate livable walkable communities around centres.
We then discussed how we can address issues such as climate change through development, which he suggested needed to start with a restriction on urban sprawl.
Is that if we're serious about climate change, from my point of view, the, one of our biggest things we've got to do is change urban form. We can't let things keep growing. And what we've seen with COVID, especially first wave COVID, was how we recolonized our streets. We recolonized our neighborhoods because we didn't need to travel so much. Now, don't get me wrong, you've got to have travel for certain reasons. And that's, you know, like, you know, universities are in certain places. People travel to those, or you go to the theatre, or you go to the rugby games or the soccer game, whatever. You've got to have to, but it's trying to reduce travel demand and try and encourage people to live and work in the same. And you can't force people to, because it's inherently a democracy. It's about choice, but it's providing choice.
So it's evident that cities are more than just buildings, and it's also about the people within them.
The word city actually derives from the Latin term civis, for citizen.
In fact, did you know, Stella, that the population of Denver, Colorado is recorded as being the happiest city? And they also have the highest connected city walkways and cycleways.
What an inconspicuous correlation.
Dr. Betty provided insight on how we interact with cities and how it affects both our physical and mental well-being.
The health benefits are well known. If people get out and walk, they ride the bike.
Recognising that people are commuting over an hour each way daily, while that is prior to lockdowns, we discussed the trade-off between short-term fixes, such as electric vehicles, compared with long-term development shifts.
You know, when you talk about post-carbon, and you've got to talk about the transition costs that go on with this, and, you know, you say EVs are not going to solve your problem because they don't deal with congestion, the minerals that go into those things, life, end of life expectancy, and also fundamentally, where is the power to run these things?
We then asked what the greatest barriers were to shifts in urban planning and development.
Why are the barriers? It's very much easier to deliver development in greenfield scenarios. And you may have just seen the new housing supply bill that's before Parliament, which is trying to increase housing stock and all laudable goals. But with that, you have to have the infrastructure provision and the transit provision or the public transport things to go with it. And that's the biggest problem we're doing, is that we're disconnecting and not linking public transport infrastructure provision with this. You know, we say housing supply. When people talk about a housing crisis, to me, it's not a housing crisis, because there's no point in giving people what you perceive as affordable housing where it takes them an hour and a half to drive to their job. That's not affordable housing. It's about, like I said, providing those opportunities for jobs, retail, entertainment, open spaces, all built within that concept so people can do these things.
Lee raises an excellent point on that it is not just a housing crisis, and that social norms on how we live may need to change in order to achieve sustainable development, which can be done by showing people benefits.
And the idea of communities within a neighbourhood and what is described as a 20-minute city ideology, where all your main resources can be accessed by a 20-minute walk, which during lockdown, along with the classic Mount Eden sunset walk I've been doing.
Lee describes this concept of livable cities.
The neighbourhood park becomes an extension to your house. The cafe downstairs is an extension to your house. They are part of your living environment. So you forego your backyard so that you go and play, your kids play with your neighbour's kids, and you get to meet, create social cohesion through that process. You know, that's what we need to be thinking about, is those trade-offs. And, you know, and with the big moves about moving people, you know, movement, we need to invest in transit. And, you know, you saw in yesterday's Herald, Auckland Transport is trying to do this by saying, let's put dedicated busways in, let's remove car parking, let's do these things. Yes, you need to do these things to provide so that you can walk out the you know, like the Mount Eden scenario, you can get out there now and you don't worry about when the bus is going to come, because you know that every 5 or 10 minutes there's going to be a bus coming down the street. And that's what we need to do, but we need investment and we need central government to invest in this. And it's going to take a lot of, you know, it's going to break, you know, as we say to the students in the urban design course, you know, sometimes to make an omelet, you've got to break some eggs, you know, and we're not being mean, but we're saying, what we're saying here is, yes, yeah, some people are going to be upset. There is people are going to have to acknowledge that their lifestyles are going to have to change. And that's what's going to have to happen. It's a question of showing people the benefits of what we're doing.
I love the idea of making an omelette.
But he does raise an excellent point on the rights to the city, where we need equitable access to job opportunities. He draws on some international examples.
And it's not a one-size-fits-all either. It's about choice. It's about freedom. It's about choice. And because inherently, urban planning, urban design gets its legitimacy through democracy. And it's a really underlying principle. That's why I say, you know, we can't force people to do this. We can only provide the opportunity and show them the benefits. And people make those conscious decisions. If you're sitting in your car for an hour going, why the hell am I having to listen to classic hits, because it's that same thing that calms me down. And the other issue that really comes with this too, which we haven't talked about, is the issue of equity. We've got to be sure that we don't just deal it for one set of society. We've got to think about the rights to the city, and we've got to ensure what we're talking about, everyone comes with us and everyone has the same access and opportunities as the things that we're talking about. But the idea is that you don't have to commute. The idea is, it's, you know, Sydney used to have a strapline, a city of 100 villages. And that was the concept of what they were thinking about, was that, yeah, you've got these CBDs, you've got CBD Sydney, and you've got Parramatta, which is the western CBD of the city. But the idea is that you only go then for the certain things you need to go to those things for. The rest of the time, as I say, the choice is that you don't have to do that. You don't have to live in Whangaparaoa and come down to Auckland. You don't have to live in Māngere and come into work into the city.
This has made me excited to see how Auckland and other cities in New Zealand grow.
I know travel time and emissions will play deciding factors on where I live after uni.
I think that an important takeaway from this interview, additionally to the fact that infrastructure takes time, is that cities and communities are what we make them.
And as always, Kia Kaha listeners, we hope you're also enjoying exploring the city of Sales whilst we continue in Level 3.
Shop local and stay critical, Earthlings.
Looks like everything's going to be all right.
Tomorrow's World with Isla Christensen and Stella Huggins on 95 BFM.